This edition of the Monocle Arts Review was first broadcast on the 14th of May 2015 on Monocle 24. Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Tom Edwards. Today I'm joined by Kathy Rensenbrink, books editor at The Bookseller, who's going to talk me through a trio of novels. On our reading list we have A God in Ruins, Kate Atkinson's latest page-turner. All involved, Ryan Gatiss' debut novel set in the 1992 Los Angeles riots, and Man Booker Prize-winning author Anne Enright's latest offering, The Green Road. That's all to come here on the Arts Review on Monocle 24. Welcome to the show, Kathy. Let's start with Kate Atkinson's latest novel, A God in Ruins. It's a sort of a companion piece to her last book, Life After Life, which followed a character called Ursula Todd through the First and Second World Wars. A God in Ruins is about Ursula's younger brother, Teddy's life throughout the 20th century. Kathy, tell us a little bit about this book and how it sits sort of alongside Life After Life.
Yes, it's so interesting because her first novel, Life After Life, showed us Ursula again and again. The conceit of the novel is that sometimes an event will happen, and sometimes Ursula dies, sometimes she lives, sometimes she goes in a different direction. So multiple versions of lives in that novel. And then one of the characters from that novel, Teddy, Ursula's brother, rides again in this second novel. It's not a sequel, it's more of a companion piece, and I think it really works from that. And one of the fascinating things about it is that you just do feel it's sort of ever expanding fictional worlds, so really playing with the notion of what exists within a book and what exists outside of its covers in our imaginations. I really loved it. I can't recommend it highly enough. Teddy is a pilot in the Second World War, so there's lots of scenes of that that are all extremely well done. And again, in terms of reading the two novels together, and I haven't done yet, but reading A God in Ruins really made me want to reread Life After Life. But Life After Life is quite a lot in the Blitz, set in London as the bombs are falling in London. And then, of course, in A God in Ruins, you have Teddy flying off in his bomber plane to bomb elsewhere. And I think that I think reading the two novels close together would be a very rewarding experience.
And it's interesting, we often talk about sort of, you know, genre-defying fiction, this sort of thing. You know, interesting sort of chronologies to the book. It's quite complex, and yet I guess some people would say if you are dealing with that kind of complexity in your novel writing, it can be difficult to maintain, you know, momentum or suspense. But this is a skilled writer going about their craft in a very creative way.
Yes, I mean, she's just amazing. I think it is true that in lesser hands, this could probably be a bit of a dog's breakfast, but it isn't. She's just magnificent, and again, she really makes you aware of that multiplicity of stories as there are in everybody's lives. And obviously what fiction does is it slices and dices a life and serves it up to us, kind of giving us the illusion that we're experiencing completeness. But of course we never are. We're always having a version. And this sort of lays bare that notion, but in a way that for me doesn't detract from the momentum of the story. I always like the story to be there. You know, some postmodern novels would take away so much of the story and the structure, which is a step too far to me. But I think this just absolutely completely treads that tightrope.
And I don't want to be in the position of issuing, you know, spoiler alerts on this program, but there are kind of some twists and turns, some unforeseen, some real surprises, aren't there? Which I guess sit more comfortably with the traditional idea of what a novel should be, you know, maybe wrong-fitting you even to the last without giving anything away.
Yes, people just have to read it, really. Yes, there's all sorts of fun things that happen, and then there's a whole other, you absolutely think you know where you are with the book, and then something happens and you realise that you were reading it in a, well, not in a wrong way, but it takes the rug out from under your feet. There's also an afterword, and I think that the afterword itself deserves a prize all of its own. And she says in the afterword that all fiction is not only fiction, but is about fiction. And that's very certainly, I don't know whether all fiction is, but certainly this novel is about fiction. It's about the craft of fiction. It's about the art and instinct to make things up.
Do you think, because people often talk about that, you know, reviewers and critics love reading books about books and you talk about fiction about fiction. Is that something, do you think, canny writers know that if they operate in that territory, it's likely that they'll sort of garner enthusiasm? I don't know, Cathy, even people like yourselves. Or is that me being a little cynical about the whole
experience? No, I mean, I think it's quite an interesting point. The main thing is that the question that nobody knows the answer to is people within the industry like books about books, but do normal people like books about books? And I think...
You're all normal people, aren't you?
Civilians, as I call them, non-trade people. Are they as interested in books about books? I've been thinking about this a lot recently, actually, because I've been thinking that books that involve artists work really well, whereas books with novelists as characters work much less well. Having said that, there is a novelist in A God in Ruins called Viola, who she's not a very nice novelist. And that, again, it's all quite interesting in itself, watching her sort of slightly acerbic swipes at the industry.
Surely all novelists are nice people, aren't they?
Well, that's another bit. We need a whole other programme for that
subject. Another special show that can be. That's Kate Atkinson's A God in Ruins is out now, published by Doubleday. Should we go to Los Angeles, Cathy? Why not? The setting for our next read, All Involved by Ryan Gatiss, which takes place during the 6 days of the 1992 LA riots. The book is split into 6 sections, each covering a single day, and together they tell the stories of 17 people involved in the riots, from gang members to nurses to graffiti artists. That sounds like, and we're talking about, you know, ambitious undertakings on the page. That sounds ambitious. Is it effective for that? Is it too much taken on?
No, it's very well done. It's a very visceral novel. It feels very present. It's a hard read in places, blood spattered, but it's very absorbing. And I think I must say I have a fondness for novels where the narrative action passes between the characters. I call them relay novels because I imagine it as the story baton goes from one hand to another. So I do have a fondness for them. And this works really well because I think somehow that almost enables you to cope with the bloodshed and the terror, because you're continually changing your viewpoint to someone else's viewpoint. It's just very good. And what's interesting about it is that to a certain extent it's almost a historical novel being set as it is all that time ago. But because unfortunately there's no shortage of civil disturbances in the States at the moment, I did feel I had possibly more of an understanding after reading the novel as to why riots happen and how they happen and what's happening in the minds of some of the people involved. So it did feel, I think I was actually reading it as scenes on the television were
from Baltimore, well, or so many
from,
other
well
so
yeah from others, one of sadly, the, so many from locations. One of the places. So, and of course I don't think probably at the time of writing it didn't seem current in that way, I would imagine. But it's one of those things where not in a good way, but the planets have sort of aligned to make this feel like a very current novel, even though it has a historical setting.
That's really interesting. Do you think that does change, you know, I guess, the prism through which you come to a book in its current moment of publication? Does that inevitably change it changes the context, but does it change the substance? That's quite an interesting question.
I do think it's interesting. I think that because quite often, but publishing books takes a long time. Obviously, writing a book takes a long time, and then the process of publishing it takes a long time. So sometimes, by the time things come out, the thing that inspired it, say 4 or 5 years ago, might have moved out of public consciousness, or it might have become more important. And so that is always just quite an interesting thing to see how things align for individual books. And the whole notion of publishing books is such a risky business, really, that sometimes then when it just, as I was reading this, it just occurred to me that I thought, actually, that there is a readership for this novel of people that want to know, that do want, that like learning things through fiction and do find themselves watching the telly and thinking, how does this happen?
Yeah, to make sense of it. I wonder, in terms of the author's skills, because if you're depicting a time and a series of events that involve a lot of, you know, nihilistic, disenfranchised young people on the one hand, do you need to be particularly empathetic and particularly skilled at capturing, you know, the vagaries of the human condition to sort of do justice to people who outwardly perhaps don't have the kind of complex narratives and an emotional depth maybe that a lot of great characters in fiction often do? Does it require a particular skill to bring those stories to life?
It's an interesting thing, because I thought it seemed spot on, but then having said that, you know, I wasn't in LA in 1992 hanging out with Latino gang members, so what do I know? But certainly in terms of the art of fiction, it absolutely persuaded me that this was real. I know the author did lots of research, he spoke to lots of gang members, and I know that he was very respectful about that, and he worked hard to try to represent the views of all the people whose narratives he captured by talking to people involved. And I think you feel that in the book in a good way. You never want it, and this doesn't happen. I think sometimes novels, they wear their research a bit too heavily. That doesn't happen here, but you do feel that it's authentic and sort of respectful, and not it's not voyeuristic somehow, despite the fact that it's often very violent. I think that's potentially another danger. But again, he sidesteps all the various traps and difficulties, and I think this is a great achievement.
That awkward line rather well. Well, it's called All Involved. It's by Ryan Gatiss. It's published by Picador. It hits bookshelves on the 21st of May. Let's conclude, shall we, by talking about The Green Road by Man Booker Prize winning novelist Anne Enright. This explores the relationships between members of the Madigan family as their Irish childhood home goes up for sale. Is that an apposite summary of what happens in this book?
Yes, very much so. Dysfunctional Irish families, of which my dad's Irish, so I have a bit of previous and a bit of interest in this subject. Though I never know, again, I was completely brought up in England, and I don't know, you know, I read and enjoy Irish novels, but again, in terms of knowing whether or not they're accurate, I could as well be in LA in 1992.
But it's certainly a rich literary scene, even if you think of, you know, contemporary writing out of the British Isles or whatever you'd call them. There are some extraordinary families, these great dynastic traditions. Does this sit comfortably, do you think, in that recent history?
Yeah, and I think it's an onward development from her other novels. Her novel The Gathering won the Booker Prize, and I think this one is better. It could win another Booker Prize for her. It's just astonishing. She's such a good writer. I described it to somebody the other day. It's a bit like being punched in the face, but elegantly.
Okay, we'll work with you on that one.
But again, there's just so much going on in terms of, you know, with so many Irish novels, religion is sort of sitting there, sort of has this brooding presence through the novel. But it's all quite tightly plotted. Again, it's that it's all hinges around this moment where Rosalina's decided to sell her house and divide the proceeds between her children. They've all scattered all over the world, and they kind of come home for this final Christmas. And that itself is interesting, isn't it? In every culture, I think, the way that children, grown-up children, tend to think of their parents as a resource or somehow belonging to them, don't like the idea that they might move or change or do things. She's just such an amazing writer, and she paints a great picture of that sort of Atlantic coast of Ireland. You're very aware again of there is this thing, you know, Irish people leave. It's what so many of them do, and it's what her children have done. And then they come back and they're trying to reconcile with each other. So really sort of delicate and robust novel all at the same time.
And is it a book then about the sort of Irish diaspora, or is it about family, or is it kind of inevitably actually about the two and how those phenomena are intertwined?
Yeah, I do think that's exactly what it is. It's about both of them. It's about the urge to leave, and then the complicated relationship with what you've left behind, and how it feels to go back, and what that means, and how you create an identity in another place. All of those things, and they go to disparate places, the children. So there's all sorts of different bits from other bits of the world. And then you see them over years as well. So it's quite interesting from the point of view of the developments of the characters. So you might see a character as a child and then meet them again as an adult, or meet them in one of the other siblings' narratives as an adult.
So we talked a bit actually about, you know, the novelty of structure and the chronology in some of the books we've been talking about. It almost sounds like this whole story can be broken down into a series of small stories, you know, little tales within, but you know, books within a book almost. Could it almost be read that way?
Yes, it could actually. It wouldn't be that much of a stretch to see it as a series of, I mean, it's not, because it's not, sometimes novels are actually short story collections pretending to be novels because novels sell a bit better. So it isn't one of those at all. But having said that, it wouldn't be much of a stretch to see it as a series of sort of linked character portraits. Again, it doesn't sag or bag in the narrative, because there is always this driving force that's you know that they're all coming home, and you're kind of waiting to see how this happens, how they're all going to interact with each other, how they're going to be. I think it's interesting really, because probably lots of novels are about one person's journey into being, aren't they? That whether it's a rites of passage novel or a midlife crisis novel, it's about one person and their efforts to see how they can live in the world. But the great thing with family novels is you get a clutch of people, and then you see them, you see how their background and upbringing is affecting them in different ways, and how they then navigate and negotiate each other.
The Green Road by Anne Enright is on sale now, and it's published by Jonathan Cape. And that brings us to the end of today's show. Why not just choose, if you were on your this month's desert island and you could choose only one of these books to take with you, could you pick one out?
I would pick out the Kate Atkinson, just because it's so, I mean, it's, May is such a good month, so in any other month I'd probably pick one of the others, but I would pick out the Kate Atkinson. And actually, if you only had 10 minutes left to live, you could just read the afterword.
There you go. High praise indeed. Cathy Rentham, thanks very much for joining us on the programme. This has been the Monocle Arts Review with me, Tom Edwards. My producer was Holly Fisher. Our researcher was Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Join us again at the very same time tomorrow. We'll be talking film. Until then, it's goodbye from me. Thanks for tuning in.